Saturdays and Sundays at 1500 and 2000 UTC.
The conflict in Ethiopia's Tigray region has triggered one of the worst humanitarian crises in the world. Fighting erupted again last week between Ethiopian government forces and the Tigray People's Liberation Front. Each side accuses the other of initiating the attacks, while millions of people are facing severe hunger due to the region's worst drought in four decades. Did the global community forget about the humanitarian crisis in Ethiopia?
The humanitarian crisis in Tigray is more than Ukraine. Maybe the reason is the color of the skin of the people in Tigray.
What is life like for those caught up in the conflict? Henry Wilkins, who has been reporting for VOA from the region, will give us an update on the latest. Then we'll take an in-depth look at the Tigray conflict. Straight Talk Africa starts right now. Welcome to Straight Talk Africa. I'm Vincent Macquarie in for Heidi Adams. This week we are discussing the volatile crisis in the Tigray region of Ethiopia. Fighting erupted last week between Ethiopian government forces and the Tigray People's Liberation Front, breaking a fragile truce and pushing further the citizens of the region into a dire humanitarian crisis. Henry Wilkins has been reporting for VOA from the region and gives us an update that we recorded earlier from Addis Ababa. Today, he's heading again to the Tigray region.
The fighting started again on Wednesday last week, bringing to an end a five-month ceasefire. Right now, who resumed the fighting is unclear. Both sides have blamed each other. The fighting has taken place around the town of Kobo, which is in the Amhara region on the southern border with Tigray. At the moment, it does sound like the fighting is spreading south in the direction of Weldia. Last year, Tigrayan forces came within 200 kilometres of the capital. Right now, they're around 400 kilometres away. There was a government airstrike on Mekele in the capital of Tigray on Friday. Reports said that it killed at least seven people, some of them children, after accusations that it hit a kindergarten. So the government has denied this and accused the TPLF of doctoring images. There have been some hopes of peace talks before the renewed fighting. This is looking less and less likely by the day. What humanitarian access had been allowed into Tigray, which was under a humanitarian blockade, has now been suspended. The UN have said that they're worried that parts of the region are already in a state of famine. So the situation really is desperate. The humanitarian situation really is desperate in Tigray at the moment. This is Henry Wilkins for VOA News in Addis Ababa, Ethiopia.
Well, thank you very much, Henry, for that report. And we caught up with a few residents in Addis Ababa and asked them what they think of the latest resurgence of war in their country.
I was shocked when I heard the news this morning. We had hoped that we were ready for peace, but now our home is gone. If they start the war, it would not be good for the people of Ethiopia and Tigray. Those who pick up their weapons are not thinking about the people. It's not too late to put those weapons down and come to the table to talk. This is something the Ethiopian people should come out and say. Enough is enough. Politics is a game of knowledge and art, and we should use that and come to the negotiating table. That should be the basis for Ethiopia. And we have to learn lessons from other countries who have been damaged by war, like Syria and others. The choice should have been negotiation and peace. We saw what war did last time, and it will do the same thing again. It will just cause damage. The main thing is peace. If that doesn't work, there's nothing we can do.
Well, now joining us is our guests in studio, Salem Solomon, lead editor, Real Time News, Voice of America. Joseph Sigal, director of Research Africa Center for Strategic Studies, National Defense University. And he joins us from Washington. And then we're joined also by Gizao Legese, who is an analyst and is coming to us via Skype from the U.S. state of Maryland. A warm welcome to you, lady and gentlemen. Kind of outnumbered here. But I want to actually start with you, Salem, right here in studio. You know, This is the latest flare wrap, and the question, and you can see the people baffled and confused. Why did the truce fail? I mean, or has it, seeing this attack again happening?
It's very, there's a little bit of optimism in the 5 months since the ceasefire and possible peace talks negotiation led by, Kenyan President Uhuru Kenyatta and former Nigerian President Obasanjo, who was the African Union envoy. There was some hope that, peace and negotiations were in the works. But what we were seeing last week, all of that has really faded away. There was an airstrike that that attacked a kindergarten in the capital city of the Tigray region, Meqale, killing several people, including children, as Henry just explained in the outset of this program. And so it seems as though that these peace negotiations are not really, it looks like there's no end in sight at the moment as conflict is raging.
Yes. Now, Legese, if I may come to you, what we get from Addis Ababa is that both sides blame each other. The TPLF has blamed the government for the violence, and of course the government forces blame TPLF. The question is, really, why have these two sides, from your own assessment, failed to get to a point where they can actually sustain this, cessation of violence, which really ends up hurting the citizens of Ethiopia, the innocent citizens?
Thank you. I really appreciate the opportunity. So first, just to correct a couple of things, the war that started last week is not in Tigray. The only bullets in Tigray are the airstrikes. The war is waged against Afars and Amharas in the Afar region and the Amhara region by TPLF forces. So when we talk about the war, the actual victims who are being dislocated, who are being killed, kids are not going to school, are not in Tigray. It is in Afar and Amhara. Second, this morning, according to government statement, TPLF has launched 3-pronged attacks against the Amharas in Gondar and Sokoto. Now, to go back to why didn't the peace process work, I think the facts are on the ground. The Ethiopian government still is asking for negotiations without preconditions. I will repeat it because this is such an important factor. Ethiopia is asking negotiations without precondition. It is TPLF that stated, even the letter Dr. Debretsion wrote to the United Nations, to Secretary Blinken and to other people, clearly states they have preconditions, including territory, including power and all of that stuff. Second, they rejected the African Union. Let's remember, the African Union and Obasanjo had the support of the U.S. Department of State, the United Nations, and even the European Union. So the peace process is not working because TPLF wants to get everything before negotiations.
Well, of course, TPLF has a totally different perspective. But I want to come to you, Mr. Segal, from an international point of view, and we know the U.S. has been involved also in these negotiations. We have even seen that conversation going on right here in Washington, D.C., probably last year or the year before. Why do you think this has persisted? Is it just about the precondition issue, or are there points, are there issues on both sides that are making it impossible for the country to maintain a truce and a ceasefire, at least for the benefit of the citizens of Ethiopia?
Yeah, well, I think we need to, recognize that the parties are dealing with very difficult issues. And so it's always been the expectation that this is going to take time to resolve. You know, fundamentally, this is a political problem. It's an issue of how Ethiopia is going to operate as a federal state and the respective roles and authorities that the respective regions are going to have vis-a-vis the federal government. And that is what the Tigrayan leaders have been challenging. And, you know, their intent really has been to create a high degree of autonomy for Tigray and have even floated the idea of secession. And so at the core, this is about how do you keep Tigray in Ethiopia in a functioning as a functioning state. And these are hard issues. You know, Tigray is challenged because it is geographically isolated, and you know, it faces Eritrea on the one border, and it faces Ethiopia throughout its southern border. And so it is geographically isolated, economically isolated, and politically isolated. You know, international actor has recognized Tigray as an independent state. Now, so it's hard, and there are a lot of really difficult issues to deal with. You know, I think we should recognize, though, that there has been some progress over the last 5 months during the truce. There has been some incremental opening. There has been increased humanitarian assistance. There has been the freeing of political prisoners. There's been, you know, talks about the negotiations. So there was some progress made. I don't feel that all hope is lost. I feel both sides do recognize in the end this has to be resolved through a political means. That said, there are hardliners on both sides, those who still want to use military force as a means of gaining greater leverage, or in the case of the Tigrayans, you know, potentially retaking parts of western Tigray, which would open up their border access to Sudan, which may be another lifeline through which they can resupply. And in that case, make this a more regional conflict. And if that is the case, then this could escalate again. Mm-hmm. So it's tricky, it's hard, but I do feel like there's a lot of progress that has been made and that can be built on moving forward. Yes.
So in few words, really, would you say what we're witnessing now is kind of just a setback, but there's goodwill, there's a desire to actually resolve this and have a country intact, peaceful, and moving forward?
Well, I think there's multiple positions on each side, so it's hard to simplify it to a single term. But I think, you know, ultimately we'll just see how it plays on the ground. This could be a setback. It could be a effort on the part of the TPLF to try to strengthen its negotiation position. On the other hand, this may be part of a broader offensive on the part of the TPLF. They may be trying to take back the border areas in western Tigray and really change the geostrategic dynamic of the conflict. So we don't know for sure, but I think the broader political dynamic isn't all hopeless. I think that there has been some genuine progress and interest on all sides that can be built on.
Yes, and we know that whenever this happens, when two sides engage in conflict, there are human beings in between. There are human beings suffering. So I want to go now to the World Health Organization's Director General, Tedros Adhanom Ghebreyesus, who suggested that racism is behind a lack of attention paid to the plight of civilians in Ethiopia's war-shattered Tigray region. Let's take a listen.
The humanitarian crisis in Tigray is more than Ukraine, without any exaggeration. And I said it many months ago, maybe the reason is the color of the skin of the people in Tigray. I haven't heard in the last several months now, even a head of state talking about the Tigray condition anywhere in the developed world especially. Why? I think we know. But the only thing we're asking is, Can the world come back to its senses and uphold humanity? If it's the worst humanitarian crisis, and I'm saying nowhere on earth 6 million people are sealed off, nowhere, from basic services, from their own money, from telecom, from food, from medicine. This is the worst disaster on earth as we speak. I am from Tigray. It's not because I am from Tigray that I'm saying this. That's the truth.
The WHO Director General, of course, he does say he's from Tigray, but he's also speaking as an official of this world body. Now, you have been talking to people in the region. You're familiar with what's going on there. What are the people going through? What are they saying? And what do they feel about how the international community is responding to their problems?
So, you know, people are devastated, obviously, and also to the point, Tedros Adhanom, when he says that he's from Tigray, and he himself has said, you know, he has family members that he can send money. Understandably, he's distraught, and he's also using his position to make a point about humanitarian issue. This is not a political issue. It's understandable that he is using his position to point out that this is a very, very dire situation that's going on. He mentioned a point about race, because it's very complicated, and rightfully most Africans believe and see that, you know, their plight doesn't get enough attention as much it would get, you know, when you see Western countries. Ukrainian issue is one of the examples we can think of. And historically, you can bring up so many examples like this. You know, the Rwandan genocide is one example where this kind of race issue was raised. It's very complicated, and because during the time in 1994, there was a parallel conflict happening in Kosovo, and you know, the Western world, international community banded together and acted quickly. And so it's the same thing also when Ebola crisis happened in 2014. And so, you know, the international community immediately acted on or responded quickly when the Western world was affected. And so there's this very complex plight, and also legitimate issue of disregard for issues like what's happening in Tigray. So that's what he's raising. But from our reporting, from the people that we speak to, we're speaking to people who have gone through unimaginable horrors. Women who have suffered from sexual violence and rape in Tigray. And this is way before, you know, how the war has escalated now. It's been how many years now? But from the start of the war, Human Rights Watch has said that some soldiers that are aligned with the Ethiopian government, the Amara militia forces, known as FANNO, and also the regional Amara forces. Imagine, Tigray is basically sandwiched in all of these forces coming. And so these attacks have really wreaked havoc. Just to mention earlier, somebody, one of the panels said, you know, a correction. But to set the record straight, what we know as journalists, you know, the government has essentially blacked out, basically, information from going out. Our reporters are, you know, people have meager means of even communicating with the world. Information is completely shut down. And so it's very, very hard to even really see the scale of damage that Tigray has gone through since the start of the conflict. Mm-hmm. But the conflict has spread all over, outside of Tigray as well. And so, obviously, people are devastated. Yeah. Families are torn. The loss of people displaced and seeking refuge all over. And so it is very, very concerning and dire condition.
And Gizao, you see, the WHO Secretary General talks about a whole 6 million people. And, of course, it's compared to the Ukrainian crisis. And they're saying the world has turned their eyes away from Ethiopia. As a person who is here in the United States, you're an Ethiopian, and you don't have to be from Tigray, for example. I'm not from anywhere closer there. How do you actually respond to to kind of the situation there in within the framework of what Dr. Tedros has said? I think we have an...
Dr. Tedros, as we know, was chairman of the TPLF. And as we know, TPLF ruled Ethiopia for 30 years. And his statements are basically a reflection of the very ideology and the narrative that his organization has been waging for 30 years. Dr. Tedros did not address the people of Wollo, Afar, Gondar that are still occupied by the TPLF forces. But I wanna go back. A more important discussion, in my opinion, was why this conflict, how is it difficult to solve this conflict? Before I go there is no region in Ethiopian history, in the long Ethiopian history, there is no region called Western Tigray. Western Tigray was created by the armed annexation of land from Gondar by the TPLF about 30 years ago. Now I will go back to the real issue you raised. What is the real problem? In my opinion, that there are two problems in Ethiopian politics that are really complex. I appreciate the other guest stating that it is very complex. One is ethnic federalism. Not federalism, ethnic federalism. About 30 years ago, the TPLF, without participation from the vast majority of Ethiopians, instituted ethnic federalism. So in Ethiopia, politics is not about ideology. It's not about ideas. It's not about values. It is about ethnicity. It is about identity. So in the political sphere, we don't see the competition of ideas like we just saw in Kenya during the presidential elections. What we see is competition among ethnic groups.
Mm-hmm.
Now, from the very start, many Ethiopians, particularly the Amaras and those who identify as Ethiopian, have stated that the problem of the country is the very political system that was instituted by the TPLF.
And we can advance that conversation, but I just wanted to ask you, like, just in a word or two, do you, regardless of all that, have a kind of feel as some compassion for the millions of Ethiopians, Tigrayans and others who are going through what they are going through every day?
100%. I tell you, 99% of Ethiopians sympathize, feel sorry, want to contribute to the well-being of the Tigrayan people. I think we shouldn't generally equate TPLF and the people of Tigray one and the same. Remember, at least one out of five Tigrayans live in other parts of Ethiopia, in Gondar, in Bahardar, in Addis Ababa, in Hawassa, in outside of Ethiopia.
Yeah.
They have businesses. They work in the government. Of course, we feel like that.
The problem
is TPLF. And I think we have to differentiate between the two.
Now,
but I feel very, very strongly for the people of Tigray.
And that is something good to hear, because there's the humanity part of it. And we'll come back to that in the TPLF as a position. Of course, the government of Addis has a position. But I want to remind you that Straight Talk Africa is streamlining live on Facebook. Be sure to join our conversation there. And we're also on Twitter at VOA Straight Talk Africa. We'll be right back.
Health, wellness, sport, beauty, medical breakthroughs. Healthy Living cares about your well-being. What are the main health concerns in Africa and around the world? Find out the latest on coronavirus. Connect with our experts and ask them questions.
How long does the virus stay?
Join me, Linoch Mudu, in Washington, every week on Healthy Living, right here on VOA.
Well, we are talking about the conflict in the Tigray region in Ethiopia. Before we continue our discussion, I want to go to a report by Henry Wilkins and a controversial resettlement and land distribution effort by Amhara authorities in western Tigray. Henry gained rare access to the town of Maykadra and spoke to ethnic Tigrayans who claim they're being forced from the region and ethnic Amharas who claim they're neglected because of new arrivals.
The state-funded Ethiopian Human Rights Commission in Addis Ababa recently told VOA it could investigate claims of land being redistributed unlawfully in the disputed region of western Tigray.
If these claims are verified, they're certainly definitely very concerning to the Ethiopian Human Rights Commission, and we will monitor and investigate, yes.
According to a Reuters report published in June 2021, Amhara regional authorities were encouraging ethnic Amharas to move into Maykadra in western Tigray, an area that has been administrated by the Tigray region for decades. Amhara regional officials claimed 500,000 ethnic Amharas were forced off their land during the 30-year reign of the previous government, dominated by one of the parties in the ruling coalition, the Tigray People's Liberation Front, TPLF, which held power until 2018. VOA cannot independently verify that claim. The report also said Tigrayans were being illegally forced off their land as part of an effort to move ethnic Amharas into the disputed land, adding to rights groups' concerns of ethnic cleansing. Since then, Amhara officials have been reluctant to give information on the scale of the plan to settle ethnic Amharas in the land previously inhabited by Tigrayans. Some told VOA in May, however, that ethnic Amharas continue to move into the disputed land. But ethnic Tigrayans are not the only ones impacted by ethnic-based land distribution, residents say. Given rare access to Maykadra, a town in western Tigray, VOA found a protest organised by ethnic Amharas against new arrivals from the same ethnic group. Protesters claim long-term residents are being neglected. Although VOA was advised not to film the protest, one demonstrator spoke on the condition his identity be hidden.
Today we were forced to go out to protest, asking for land, as we are the ones left behind after the massacre and need to till land for our daily bread.
The town of Maykadra made world headlines in November 2020 when hundreds of ethnic Amhara civilians were massacred by ethnic Tigrayans. An excavator had to be brought into the town to bury the dead, according to local reports. Amhara regional forces then engaged in revenge killings of ethnic Tigrayans. Atakilt Hagos Kassa, an ethnic Tigrayan who has lived in the community for decades, said many people sought refuge in this church during the massacre. He says he was saved from an attacking Amhara mob by Amhara friends, but most Tigrayans have fled the town because they fear reprisal.
Almost half left the city during the night. Many of them went to Sudan. Some went towards Gondar. Members of well-to-do families went elsewhere.
The mayor of Maykadra insists relations between the two ethnic groups have improved recently.
The people guilty of carrying out the massacre already left the city. Those killers will face trial. No one pushed them to leave the city. They left on their own accord because they know the land doesn't belong to them. That's why they killed and massacred.
He dismissed claims of ongoing ethnically motivated attacks against Tigrayans and played down the issue of land disputes and the protests taking place in the town that day. Henry Wilkins for VOA News, Maykadra, Ethiopia.
Well, that was Henry Wilkins reporting. We are talking about the conflict in the Tigray region of Ethiopia. Here in studio, I have Salim Solomon, lead editor, real-time news, Voice of America, Joseph Sigal, director of research, Africa Center for Strategic Studies, National Defense University. And we have Gizal Legese, an analyst who is joining us via Skype from the U.S. state of Maryland. And welcome once again. Now, I want to go to Sigal. I would like you to react, of course, to that report we just heard there. It kind of demonstrates the complexity of this issue in Ethiopia. We can see there's history there. There are things that have been done by the TPLF government, by, you know, the historical complexities there. But at the same time, Mr. Sigal, the WHO Director General has said the conflict in Ethiopia is way bigger The humanitarian crisis is way bigger than that of Ukraine, but nobody's talking about it. So here's a question. Is it because, or is this being an internal conflict, making it a bit more different than the Ukrainian situation where there's an external force invading another country?
Well, I think that is one factor. It's just so much more difficult to get information out of Ethiopia. And so it's not making it onto the international headlines. You know, what's happening in Ukraine is in Europe. There's all kinds of reporting on it. It is affecting security in Europe. And so that's part of why the publicity is there. And I think Dr. Tedros's statement, you know, I think everybody can sympathize that there needs to be more attention to the humanitarian crisis in Tigray and Ethiopia more generally. And we can say, you know, that holds to other parts of Africa, that Africa doesn't get the attention that it deserves when there are these humanitarian crises, which, you know, largely are driven by conflict. And so it also means, you know, we need to dedicate more attention on the diplomatic side of things. You know, and I would just put that in context that, despite the lack of attention, the limited humanitarian assistance in Tigray is not because of lack of international support. It's because of the political impasse. There are resources available. You know, Ethiopia has, on average, received about $4 billion of humanitarian and foreign assistance since 2018. And for years before that, it was, you know, receiving, $2 to $3 billion a year in foreign assistance. So, you know, Ethiopia has clearly been a priority in terms of international attention and support. With regards to the complexity, I think the clip does a very nice job of showing, you know, there is contested territory here. And indeed, it's a very emotional issue for both Amhara and the Tigrayans, because in 1991, when the TPLF took power, Amhara claimed that territory was seized from them and reconstituted as part of Tigray. And so that is why the area became such a hotly contested property soon after the fighting started in 2020. And there have been accusations of atrocities on both sides.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And this accusations and counter-accusations, of course, will continue. And in every conflict, that's the reality. That's but right. I want to just go back to that report a little bit. It talked about the Western Tigrayan. We know that Gizao, I guess it was like, this, you know, that's kind of an artificial creation, or rather it never existed. Is this now a reality anyway that needs to be faced by both Tigrayans and Amharas and also the authorities in the entire country of Ethiopia?
Yeah, it really is about Ethiopia's fundamental, most of the conflicts in Ethiopia's regions, not just in the Tigray region right now, but in most of the regions in Ethiopia. In fact, even the conflict and the protests that led to the resignation of the prime minister prior to Abiy Ahmed was land. You know, resources and land are fundamental issues. Disputed lands are fundamental issues that, result in these protests. And then, unfortunately, in Ethiopia's case, especially in the Tigray and Amhara region case, it manifests itself in the form of ethnic tensions that have been simmering for quite some time. And so Western Tigray has been administered under the Tigray region for the past almost over 20 years because of the way that Ethiopia has been governed under the ethnic federalism system. Because one of the parties within the ruling coalition of Ethiopia, the four parties within the ruling coalition, which had a significant amount of clout and power, which is the Tigray People's Liberation Front, administered Western Tigray. Prior to that, the Amhara authorities say that that region is forcefully occupied by the Tigray region, but they call it with a different name. They call it Walqayt Dagare and Dalemtin. These are the regions that they think the Amhara say have the right to ownership of the land. Mm-hmm. But what has happened since the conflict started, and what the Human Rights Watch and Amnesty International have documented and have concluded, is that ethnic cleansing have been taking place. This is the word of the advocates who have studied it and spoken to hundreds of people who have been bussed out of this land forcefully because of this dispute that existed. But the Constitution of Ethiopia and experts that have spoken to Henry and a lot of reporters that have impartially looked at this, yeah, because it's very contentious and everybody has a stake and takes a side in this conflict, to look at it from an impartial perspective. Most historians that have studied it, and most historians that study disputed land, say that it really is a zero-sum game. Mm-hmm. If there is no, both sides are saying that it belongs to them.
We have someone else I want us to listen from. But before then, Gizao, the land issue is both emotive, it is controversial, and in any African country, you can be sure there are issues with land, whether it is between different ethnic communities or even colonialism and the years after. Now, from your vantage point, as an Ethiopian, by blood, do you see the capacity, does the country have the capacity to take away the history and say, we are starting now to move forward as a nation? There are things we may not change from the past, but we want to build a country together. Yes, TPLF existed at some point and did 1, 2, 3, and other governments have done certain things they've been accused of. But then, can we put certain things aside? Do you see the country's leaders, both sides, having that capacity to do that and move forward?
Yeah, I think you raised a very, very key issue. In my opinion, many, many, many millions of Ethiopians think the way you think. The issue is not land. The issue is the constitution and the politicization of ethnicity. You probably know Nigeria tried to have ethnic politics. It didn't work. They divided and changed, got rid of ethnic politics. In the constitution, they bar organizations from organizing around ethnicity. Kenya, we just had an election. They don't allow political movements around ethnicity. Yugoslavia went into, war because of ethnicity. Many Ethiopians like me, who do not agree with TPLF or ethnic politics, we want land to be for all Ethiopians. There should be citizenship. Let me, if I may finish.
Yeah, yes.
There should be a constitution which prioritizes citizenship rather than ethnicity. If we allow the current political order to continue, the ethnic fights will continue. So I'm hoping the Western countries and my friend Joseph will look at this out of the box. Ethiopia needs a new political dispensation that addresses ethnic grievances but is centered on liberty, on democracy, on individual rights.
And that is a real valid point in any country. And I like to hear many times people talking about that issue on both sides, including where it affects them, not just pointing the fingers to the other side. Joseph Sigal, because I know you will be leaving us soon, give us your take on some of what you've had, some kind of a reaction to what both Salema said and Gizel.
Yeah, well, I think the issue of ethnic federalism is the core problem that Ethiopia is facing. And it makes it, I think, even more difficult and different than what we see in other conflicts in Africa. There are few things people agree on in political science, but the issue of overlapping your ethnic boundaries and your political boundaries as being a bad thing. That is something that, you know, nearly all political scientists would agree on, and it has been shown by empirical evidence. Some of the examples that we've already heard, it really is just amplifying and polarizing these social tensions. And importantly, you know, people forget this was not how Ethiopia was organized prior to the institution of ethnic federalism in the early 1990s. Ethiopia was generally considered to have less acute ethnic divisions than what we see in other African countries. But when you've defined political boundaries on ethnic terms, then of course you're just encouraging ethnic nationalism and more and more fragmentation within the country. And so it's a very challenging problem diplomatically, constitutionally. And so I think that does need to be the focus of negotiations moving forward. How do you keep a federal structure so that there is a great deal of local control and influence and interest being represented in a country the size of Ethiopia, but without making the ethnic lens the focus of that?
Yeah, indeed, it's a struggle in many countries, and one hopes that all parties would work to make the country work as a unified nation. Because again, you have to remember, there are other ethnicities that are so small. They are minorities. How about them? They don't have the voice. They don't have the power. What do they do? Now, Joseph Siegel, thank you. I know you're going to leave us soon. Joseph Siegel is Director of Research Africa Center for Strategic Studies at the National Defense University. We really appreciate you being with us. But if for some reason things change, hang on there. Hang in right there. But now we want to go to Maeza Gebremedin, a Tigrayan activist, a researcher, a human rights advocate, who talks about the violence against women in the Tigray conflict. Let's watch.
And we have learned that this isn't just another collateral damage of conflict. Rather, it was very methodological and it was very systematic in its implementation. What that means is the allied forces were using gender-based violence, or to be specific, rape and sexual slavery, not only to demoralize the Tigrayan women and at large the population in Tigray, but also to eliminate the Tigrayan identity, to Amharanize them, or to force them into abandoning their natural identity and give them a new one. So we have been hearing stories.
Well, that is heart-wrenching, and we've been reporting on the suffering, the anguish, the pain that women, especially women, have gone through in the conflict region. Now, give us your further kind of comment on what, not only what she said, but all the other stories that you've had to listen to from the Tigray region, from Ethiopia.
It's very difficult as a journalist to listen to, especially when you speak the language. When you listen to what kind of violent acts have been committed on children sometimes. Some of the rape survivors are the ages of 6 to 80 plus years old. And so it was very, in some cases, as Human Rights Watch said, and they're reporting their finding after a year-long report, that some of these tactics they categorize as a weapon of war. What you see in conflicts that one of the interviewees said, the intent of this kind of violence is to humiliate, because in the culture, when you're a rape victim, who do you speak to? You know, it's a taboo. It's a pain that you not only get traumatized when the act happens, but also you can't speak about it within your community. And this has happened throughout the war by soldiers. This is what makes it very, very complex and very very hard to listen to victims throughout the war. It's still ongoing. And the thing is, there are retaliatory attacks too. So when these acts happen in Tigray, retaliatory attacks, we've heard from attacks on refugees, people who are basically stuck between a rock and a hard place, and they have nowhere to go. They can't go back. Eritrean refugees, we've heard, they can't go back to their home country, and then they're stuck in Tigray, and they're, you know, being attacked from all sides. So very, very dire situation. But I want to also mention about the rhetoric around this. There's been very concerning rhetoric around the conflict in Ethiopia, including from politicians, high-level politicians, advisors of the prime minister, using rhetoric that, or the prime minister himself, you know, calling either TPLF members or politicians, using terms that are very troublesome, like, you know, calling the other group cancers, terms that are very concerning and also that can have ripple effect in the community. Social media plays a very, very dangerous role in this. But we've seen the vitriol and rhetoric, very concerning rhetoric around this, not just the act within the, you know, the battleground or within the communities that we are seeing victims of all these violent acts, but also the language used during the conflict is extremely concerning, especially when you listen and understand the language. It's been very, very concerning throughout the war.
Right. Now, Gizal, you know, in conflicts, generally, of course, as we said, there are historical things that have happened. Some historical injustices. For example, TPLF was in power, and it has been accused of having done certain things that, you know, people can't forget. Does this make some people on the other side insensitive to the suffering of the people in the Tigray region? Just because, of course, there's a history. TPLF did a few things, or a number of things that, of course, are documented. Does it make people insensitive to the extent that the focus is not on the humanitarian crisis, but too much about the politics and the past, to the extent that now the more important thing is who wins, especially on this, the ability to vilify the other side?
Extend my sorrow, my grieving or my grievance for the victims of sexual assault. So I am sorry that this happened, and the people who committed this crime should be held accountable, and I support that. Second, Salam forgot to mention that when the TPLF held a vast swap of Wello and Afar, there were women who were raped, who were humiliated. So the sexual abuse, the sexual attack has happened on both sides. It is a war, and there have been crimes from both sides on the people of Ethiopia. Mm. So to me, the most important thing, I know this as a fact, is if you, I don't know, I'm sure you guys have done some reporting, at least 100,000 Tigrayans have migrated from Tigray to Wello, to the very area TPLF held 7-8 months ago. The people of Wello accepted these people, they gave them food. They were running away because they didn't have enough food. TPLF was forcing them to give their children XYZ. The actual problem is not within the people. I mean, let me tell you something. I'm an Amara. I grew up in an Oromo region. I'm married to a Gurage from the south. And I have in-laws from Tigray, from Eritrea, Muslims, Christians, Oromos. My three brothers married Oromos. So the issue is not within the actual, the regular Ethiopian. The issue is the political elite and the constitution. In Ethiopia, fame, power, resources are a function of what ethnicity you come from. So what I'm hoping is the international community, as bad as we feel for the victims, gradually we have to think the solution is outside of the current political system. Nobody should be a victim, but we should think forward. We cannot stay where we are. Otherwise, as you said, Ethiopia has about 83 ethnic groups. Two ethnic groups, Amharas and Oromos, make about 65% of the population. 6.2% of the population is Somali, and about 6% is the Tigrayan. The others are minority. We don't hear it a lot, but they are fighting on borders. You know, almost everywhere there is a border issue.
Yeah.
So my suggestion and what my hope is, we all come to the center and say, ethnic grievances should be addressed. Our politics should transcend to what I said earlier, to democracy.
Can I just jump in here? I don't think when we were talking about the Tigray, sexual violence victims, survivors of rape in Tigray, it's because we focused on that, obviously, because retaliatory attacks happen. We've heard also, I've reported myself, on, you know, survivors of rape in the Amhara and Afar region as well when conflict spread to those regions. But fundamentally, to your question about earlier, why is this, is peace likely? Why is this negotiation not happening? Or why did it fall through? From the leadership of the Tigrayan perspective, from what we've seen, I know Mr. Gzau said that, you know, there's no bullet in Tigray, or, you know, the war is happening in the Amhara region. If you look at the bigger picture, from the Tigrayan perspective, what the leadership has said, this is a fight for survival for them. Essentially, Tigray has been sealed off. You know, you're talking about people with no humanitarian aid until April. This is why the ceasefire and the five-month lull from all of this conflict was, you know, people were optimistic about it because, you know, in April, at least the World Food Program was able to at least get in food into the region. They are sealed off, no banking, no communication. Fundamental, these are not rights that are unique to a certain population. These are human fundamental rights. So for them, how do you have all of these taken away from people and ask them to come to the table to negotiate? Mm-hmm. That is the fundamental thing. So for them, in fact, you know, the leadership, the top leadership, Debrecen Gebremichael was saying, he wrote an open letter to the world because everybody was concerned about negotiations falling through, not you know, bearing any fruit. He wrote a letter saying, you know, we the people of Tigray are fast approaching the point at which we face death, whichever way we turn. Our choice is only whether we perish by starvation or whether we die fighting for our rights or our dignity. This shows you the level. It's very ominous to even read about it, read it out loud like this. Yeah. But this shows you the level of desperation, you can say, that the leadership is facing, in the amount of strife that we are hearing in terms of basic necessities of food and other basic necessities being taken away from millions of people in Tigray.
Yeah, and we're just hoping I wanted to hope for the best because there is a ship that has just now docked in Djibouti that is supposed to bring food from Ukraine.
Yes.
And so hopefully that will reach the people.
Can I say something?
Yes, you can go ahead, please.
First of all, I appreciate Salam reporting on the sexual violence in the Amhara region. I am sorry I didn't know that. I apologize. Second, we all, Ethiopians, want basic services to restart in Tigray. But we also, the government also has offered basic services to start after negotiations. I mean, if you think about it, let me
go ahead. I wanted to say yes. In terms of what the government has offered and what the TPLF is demanding, actually, I wanted you to kind of mix that up. In terms of when it comes to the conditions or preconditions, is it unrealistic for both sides to give certain preconditions, including the TPLF, especially when it has to do with demanding certain necessities for the people before you can negotiate?
If you ask me, the most contentious issue is the issue of territory, Walkite. Out of the condition that TPLF has announced, there are two things. One is Walkite. The other one was the TPLF army. In a country, in any country, there are no two armed groups. So if these things are gradually negotiated and the TPLF army does not have access to use the internet and telephones and money to arm itself and re-attack Ethiopia, then the basic services can start.
But of course, that is now the position of the government. But people don't see those form of communication rights, for example, as being for the war purpose. But of course, indeed, it can end up starving the people of everything. And that doesn't look good, of course, I think, for some of those who are on the other side, right?
Why don't we bring up the numbers, of people that are affected here?
Yes,
you know, the situation in Tigray is extremely dire right now. 2.4 million people are severely food insecure, completely shut off, according to the World Food Program. Last year, more than 5 million people were displaced within Ethiopia, which, according to the Displaced Monitoring Center, was the highest number ever recorded in a country, surpassing Syria, countries like Syria. And so on top of this fighting, the country is facing one of the most severe droughts, as we know. The whole region is facing this because of consecutive missing rainy seasons. And so this conflict is happening in the backdrop of all the natural disasters. The conflict in Russia and Ukraine, obviously, because of Russia blocking grain, it's created this huge food crisis, not just in the country, in the Horn, but globally as well. So this is the backdrop, and this is the negotiation that has been very difficult for observers to really understand, is that how do you negotiate access to food?
Yeah, so Gizal, you can continue. And of course, it's that part where people feel the Addis government has the power, but then it looks like it has the power of life or death over the people of Tigray. So how would you explain that? And I was just trying to understand that the people of TPLF or Tigray region cannot negotiate they can only negotiate without any of those demands being met.
First of all, let's differentiate two things. Food has been, hundreds of trucks have been going into Tigray. Even recently when Mike Hammer, the envoy to the Horn of Africa, visited Mekelle, he took a picture with tons of food.
Months and months of lack of food
May I finish? Yes, prior there was a problem.
Millions of people, months and months of...
May I finish?
I think it's important to see what is being done on the ground.
I'm actually agreeing with you. Food, medicine should be provided without any hindrance.
I'm just stating the facts.
You know what? We will have to continue this conversation. Thank you. Time does not favor us. On that note, we want to thank our guests, Salem Solomon, right in studio. Joseph Sego left us a few minutes ago, and Gizal Legese. Thanks also to our audience for tuning into Straight Talk Africa. And that's it for now. Have a good night. Mm-hmm.